Thanks for having me here, Tony. My name is Karen Evans. I live in Devon. My folks live up in the north. And I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today because I've been trying to seek accountability of my father's estate now 15 years. A solicitor and accountant took control of his estate. And I say it that way because I hope it'll make itself clear as I go along. Yeah, my father died 15 years ago, and he, just to give you a bit of background, he had five children, three girls from the first marriage, two boys from the second marriage. And so he was leaving his will to all of his children. They all played a role in his life, as girls continue to play a strong role in his life up until his death. My sisters lived nearby him, and he asked me to write a will for him 2 years before he died. And on that will, he asked me to be one of the executors. My dad was taken into hospital in April 2007 with a stroke. He was taken into hospital called Clatterbridge Hospital for rehabilitation. And during this time, he wrote a will. And my sister, who went to visit him every day, went to see him one day, and he said, "I've just written a will," and he seemed fine about it. He seemed in good spirits, so he was happy with it. Then he was moved to another hospital called Arrow Park Hospital, where soon after he arrived, I believe, he was put on the Liverpool Cath Care Pathway. And there he died, aged 74.
Can you just tell us what that means?
The Liverpool Care Pathway is where presumably they withhold all food and drink. My sisters were told not to give him any food and drink, even though he was desperately wanting a drink. And in fact, he even said to my sister at the time, "They're trying to kill me in here." And I mean, she didn't take him seriously. She, you know, you wouldn't believe that's what happens when you go into hospital. So soon after he died, I got an invoice from the solicitor, and he was on his invoice. He was charging for making a will, this will that my sister had seen him afterwards and that he was really happy about. And then we found out that another will was made after this will. So I contacted the solicitor and I said, "Was there another will?" And he replied that he had realised that he had apportioned the tax wrongly, and he changed the will for our benefit. And this was done in the second hospital. Well, this was confusing for us because he'd invoiced for being there at the will in the first hospital. But many, many years later, I actually found that hospital records, when we finally got them, showed that what he'd said wasn't true. That where he's claiming the second will was made, our father wasn't there on that date and time. And in any case, 2 days after he arrived after that in the hospital, the record said he was in end stage heart failure. So we questioned throughout the 4 years. They dragged the will, the estate matters out for 4 years.
This is the solicitor dragged it out.
Yeah, the solicitor and accountant were named on this will that we were given. You know, we had lots of questions around this will because of all these conflicting stories. But they just told us that we had no rights to information, and their duty to treat all beneficiaries equally didn't seem to be happening because our half brother, who was working in the business when my dad died, we'd all worked in this business in our life. He had access to all of the information about my father's property. And when I say property, I mean his bank accounts, investments, land, and business. And the executors went to him for all the information, but they refused to show it to us. When we asked for them to evidence what they were putting in the estate, they said, "You have no right to that information." So after dragging it out for 4 years, they each took £40,000 in fees. The accountant took £12,000 without even an invoice for the last £12,000 he took. And when I sent them some final questions, they called me bitter and resentful. It's only now in later years, looking back on what I've found, that actually some of what they wrote in this letter was also not true.
But what about the basic fact that, you know, your father couldn't really have been involved in this so-called second will? So you've got two wills. How was it decided which will to use?
Well, they just chose which will to use. They refused to show us the other will. They said they didn't have the... I asked to see the previous will, and they said they didn't have it. They only had a draft.
They could show you the draft, surely.
Well, you can't know that a draft is the true will, because they could show you anything if it's not signed.
Can I just also ask you, how much roughly was your father's will worth and his estate worth? Because this, you know, obviously if an unscrupulous solicitor sees an enormous estate or a large estate that they feel that they can overcharge fees on, they've got control of the will legal process, then, I mean, surely the executors have got control, not the solicitor.
Well, they're one and the same. The solicitor and accountant were acting as executor and trustees.
Okay, so did your father put them down as the people he wanted to oversee the will?
Well, I don't know if my father did, but this was what the second will had. And when I say I don't know if my father did, I mean, further on, we got the police involved. And when they interviewed one of the remaining witnesses of the will that we were given, or the document which purported to be our father's will, they interviewed the surviving witness and asked him who was present at the signing of the will. And he said it was him, my father, and my half-brother. He did not name the other man as a witness as being present. So that in itself invalidates the will. And that's the side, all the different stories we had and the medical records about the creation of the will.
Okay, so what did the police do about that?
Well, the police focused only on the will signature. And so they did interview this the witness, and they interviewed my half-brother, and they also went to get a production order. A production order is when they demand documents from the solicitor. It was commented by the constable on the case that they even had to go to get a court order from the solicitor for these documents. He said that is unheard of, virtually unheard of. So this seemed to take ages. And, you know, at first they seemed like, great, we thought at last we're going to get justice, because this is many years down the line. There's a whole chunk been missed in this. And then they went quiet and distant. And then I kept asking to have meetings with them, and they were just focusing on the will, on the forensics, on the signature. So we gave them what documents we had, and they sent it off. And it took months and months and months. The detective chief inspector called it the silver bullet, and we eventually. They said the forensics results had been returned inconclusive, and they were going to close the case.
This is the signature, is it?
Yeah, they said the signature was the result was inconclusive due to insufficient evidence. So I really pushed to get a copy of this forensics report, and it was just an abbreviated, redacted copy. But I looked at the documents that they sent, and they did not send the most key document, which is a power of attorney dated the same day as the will. And we know that because I have that in a letter from the solicitor. A power of attorney was dated the 21st of May, the same day as the will.
What was this power of attorney, and who was it for?
Well, there was a power of attorney granted to my half-brother. Presumably, you know, I can... Yeah, I mean, I can only guess what he used that for. But yeah, there was another power of attorney related to Spanish money. But at the moment, we'll talk about the will, the police forensics. So they, so I was hoping, because we had been so built up on this. It was called the silver bullet. We'd waited so long. We had so much anticipation that last we'd get truth and justice. And I rang the forensics company and said, why didn't you consider the power of attorney? And And what about all the documents on Company's house? Because like there was another claim that was in this that we'd heard around this report that it didn't make sense. And the woman said to me, we can only consider what the police send us. You need to speak to the police to see who authorised the submission. So, but the police wouldn't tell me. They wouldn't give me that result. And by this time, I was writing to the chief constable, and he'd said that he would give me, he would make sure I got a full rights to reasoning and have these questions, well, have my questions answered, you know. But I didn't. They didn't answer my question. I went back to the detective chief inspector on the case, and I said, you know, why didn't you make this submission? And well, he actually came to see us and said, we want you to be sure we've done everything possible. And I showed him so much other stuff that they hadn't really taken on board, and he said he was going to resubmit the forensics. He was going to, they didn't even interview the man who told us to go to the police when he found share fraud. That's what sent us to the police in the first place.
Just a minute, because the forensics over the signature, can you just explain us what the problem was there?
Well, they just said it was insufficient due to insufficient evidence, but the key point was there was evidence that they had that they didn't send.
Yeah, but why was there a problem with the signature? Whose signature and why?
Thank you. Well, the signature on the will was very different to the signature on the letter of wishes, and very different to our father's normal signature.
Oh, right, so it's your father's signature we're talking about here, as to whether someone potentially may have forged it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we're still talking here about the first of the two wills, are we?
No, well, this is the second will. We've never seen the first of the two wills because the solicitor will not show it to me.
This has been a long, painful process. Can you just also just try and keep various dates and, you know, rough years when this was happening? Because it's obviously been, you know, been drawn out over a very long period.
Yes, it has. So if I do a quick summary, and then you can ask me to drill into anything particularly. So my
The dates.
So my father died in 2007. The administration of the will went on till 2011, when they finally completed. Then there was a few years. There was lots of stuff going on in our personal lives, and I needed time to recover. My son's father also died during that time. But then more information came to light afterwards, and more realization of the people that we'd been dealing with. And so a couple of years afterwards, probably 2015 in the end, something happened. My half brother was offered $2 million for a piece of land that was involved in the estate that had been put down for probate at $375,000. Now we have a claim to that land, and we believe that he is again going to attempting to defraud us on that land. So I contacted him and said, have you had an offer on this land? And he said, yes, but, you know, nothing firm, and I'm not going to do anything. But that in itself is a breach of contract, because he was supposed to inform us of any offer that he had. But because of that, and the accountant executor who was working for him also was involved in a breach of contract after the estate was finalised, I started going through the whole process of all the regulatory bodies, all the police, the police and crime commissioners. I eventually, after 10 years or so, so this started in 2015 with the Institute of Chartered Accountants. I went to the legal ombudsman. I went to their regulatory bodies. They also told me to take legal action, and I tried that, but I just found they just dragged it out. They would employ solicitors who would take months and months, sometimes a year, to reply to my letters asking for documentation. It almost felt like they were corporate bodyguards, but with the way that they just delayed, and it wasn't about what the law was or what the truth was, or just trying to set our mind at ease and say, you know, this is the situation. What do you need to know? Here you go. But we were just met with stone walls everywhere we went, it felt, Tony. And
so how much roughly was the estate worth? And because you said initially that the idea that your father wanted was to divide it up equally.
Yeah, well, we don't know, you see, because our half-brother had access to everything. Our father had money in Spain, and he originally had a property in Spain, which he sold and went on to do lots of stocks and shares. And he'd said to my sister that he had about £1 million just in Rio Tinto shares a few years before he died. He had a lot of money in Spain. And I now have evidence and documents to show that we were told to sign a power of attorney to release the money from Spain. But they used that power of attorney to get Spanish legal people to adjudicate that Dad didn't have a will in Spain when he did. So they took over, they took control of the Spanish will using this, in what I believe to be an invalid will. And the bank in Spain won't give me all the bank account details. So I don't know what's included, because even though I've also had a court order from the probate court for an inventory and account, they haven't provided these Spanish bank statements that they themselves told me about.
So how much are we talking about altogether, do you think, roughly?
Well, I wish I knew, Tony. They haven't come. I would say at least a few million involved.
And what about other beneficiaries of the will? I mean, how's relationships been with those?
Well, there is my younger sister. She and I have battled on trying to get accountability. My elder sister, there's my two half-brothers. They obviously, I believe that they've done all right out of this. And my elder sister kind of got pulled into their camp, if you like, for one reason or another.
It just seems a bit strange that there should even be a split if the will says that the money should be divided up equally.
I know. And the thing is, the solicitor had been my father's solicitor for 40 years. And the reason, part of the reason why we found that there was another will is that my auntie Peggy contacted me and said the original will. And when she made contact with us, she said that as she was leaving, and the solicitor was leaving, my dad said to her, "He's a good man. He's a good man. I can trust him." And so we trusted him because my father trusted him. And he'd worked for him for 40 years. The accountant had worked for my dad for 35 years, and I'd worked for him in the business too for 11 years. So it was confusing to us. We thought we could trust them. We hoped we could trust them, but I quickly felt like a hindrance. I felt like we were in a way that they were working for Robert, but not for us.
Well, that's your half brother, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, so now is you're quite a long way down the road now. How are you dealing with it? Is it something that you've just had to let go of?
I can't let go of it. There's many times my sisters have said, "Just let it go." I can't, because it's wrong. You know in your gut, when if they'd have come and said, "Look, what do you need to know to set your mind at ease? Where's the information? What information do you want?" I've written to the solicitor and said, "Let us see your file." He said, "No." I said, "Let us see the will that Dad signed in Clatterbridge." And he called that manifestly unfounded, which even, the Information Commissioner's Office said he was in breach of the data protection on that count. It's not manifestly unfounded to ask to see a will that there's so much controversy about.
Well, especially if you're a beneficiary of the will, you should be able to see it, surely.
Yeah. Yeah, and a big question for me, Tony, too, is that on a will that Dad asked me to write 2 years before he died, which is interesting because, you know, he'd had this solicitor for 40 years, but he asked me to write a will 2 years earlier, and he asked me to be executor on that will. And so the question that's always been in my mind, was I supposed to be an executor of this will that has been hidden?
Mm. And of course, your dad was, you know, it quite ill when this other will was made. So I guess, you know, he's really relying on trusting the solicitor. If he wants you to be a signatory on that will, or he wants you to have a copy of it, then it's all down to whether the solicitor is going to actually action that or not.
Well, that's true. And when he was very ill in the second hospital one day after he was moved, he said to my sister, tell Karen to ring the solicitor to come and see me urgently. And then he said the next day, and I said, why is he telling me to ring it? Why isn't he just asking you to ring him? And I just think maybe he was asking one executor to ring another executor to return urgently. He was clearly anxious. And my sister was working in the hospital at the time. She was doing physiotherapy training. And she saw the solicitor leave. And she went to see my dad. And she said he was acting delirious. He was talking about being on a boat from going to Australia. She said, Dad, why are you acting like that? You've never been to Australia. She couldn't understand it. But he was clearly very distressed. But for some reason couldn't say. He couldn't tell because maybe, you know, he felt some duty towards whoever.
Well, look, so how has the estate ended up being divided then?
Me and my sisters just got 50,000 each from the estate. We sold our shares in our father's business, which Robert and the accountant executor kind of reduced our price on, breached contract on. And so I don't know how much he got because we don't know. They won't account for the estate.
Mm. Well, if you had the opportunity to look back on, you know, whilst your father was still alive and still before he went into hospital, etc., what lessons have you learned from all of this? How should things have been done better?
You know what, Tony, I really don't know how things would be have done better. I would say to anyone, if they're thinking of making a will, to speak to all of the heirs and to let them know what you're leaving. And if there are any differences that you want yourself personally, then you can tell them, you know, if there's any differences that need to be made correct, then you can make them. But to speak about it, I think so many people leave wills and they don't talk about them. And so it is hard to know. If my father had said to me, I want, you know, your executor on the will, then I would have known, but people don't talk. I would also wonder if I know it can be difficult, but if all heirs are executors, the key piece on this is that we were told throughout that we had no rights, and as beneficiaries, apparently we have no. Well, they told us we had no rights. We didn't really have any powers in Spain. Beneficiaries have got the same rights as executors. And I wonder if that's why they hid the will from us in Spain, because we actually would have the right to go to the bank and say, give us the bank statements. Mm. So I think the law needs to be changed in that respect. It shouldn't be that heirs, that people, completely people outside of the family, can take control of your property that becomes legally yours, I think, as executors, I believe that's the case, and can say to the people that you want to leave your wealth to that you have no right, and can hide it, can cloak it in such in such, you know, can just hide everything. It doesn't make sense to me. And so I don't know what I'd have done different, but what I've been shocked is that the whole of the regulatory policing, my experience with the probate court wasn't good, but I don't see anyone that's really moved to pull these people to account. Like, we've got, you know, public servants, public paid people. No one has held these people to account. So I'm 15 years down the road. I've got evidence. I've gone to people and I've gone to lawyers now and said, will you do a no win, no fee? I've got it made. I've got it in the bag for you. You know, I've got all the evidence here ready and prepared. But I'm even struggling to get that. And I don't know. I'm struggling to know if I could trust another solicitor to take this case without doing it a no win, no fee, because I don't trust the legal system now.
Well, that's almost as important as your own personal experience is what you've learned about how the system is regulated, how the criminal justice system is regulated, and the whole probate system is regulated.
In my experience, it's not regulated. I got a court order for an inventory, and this is a top tip for anyone that doesn't trust what has gone into, you know, what's been on the estate accounts. You can apply to the probate court for an inventory and account. It doesn't cost you anything. You just ring them up, get a form. You don't need a solicitor. You fill it in, just get it signed at a local solicitor's for £5, a commissioner of oaths. Because as part of the Administration of Estates Act 1971, Section 9AB, they swear an oath when they get granted probate that they have to provide inventory and account upon order of the court. And so I did this, and although they didn't comply with it, and I can prove that by because they haven't sent me bank accounts that they told me about and other factors, I've contacted the probate court and I said they've not complied with the court order, and they said they have. but they haven't asked me to explain it. They haven't asked for evidence. They haven't. And I said, but if you don't listen, if they're not taking any notice of this, if they're just rebutting what I say without any question, where's the due diligence on their part? You know, are they continuing to give out grants of probate to these people, which is in effect putting other people in danger? So it's not only that it doesn't do it. When I've actually gone to them, when I've gone to people, I've begged people to carry out their roles and their responsibilities and their oaths, but I'm just feeling stonewalled wherever I go.
Absolutely shocking. What about this idea, though, that I mean, I've heard a few weeks ago from Dr. Mark Jones, who's one of the sort of, I suppose, he's in a way in the middle of a lot of this. A lot of people coming to him for advice, sharing, you know, advice with him about, particularly about dementia fraud and probate fraud. He's saying that one of the best things you can do is just sit down with the beneficiaries and do a video recording. That makes a much better will. Yeah. And it would stand up in court and everyone is absolutely clear about what's going on. Of course, if somebody, a stranger, an outsider, whether a solicitor or not, comes in, there's always the possibility that they may actually be successfully able to manipulate the whole probate process for their own benefit. And, you know, in fact, maybe even to one of the beneficiaries' benefit and then get kickbacks afterwards.
And right at the beginning, when I was asking the so-called executors questions, one of them actually said to me, it wasn't your father in the end. He was intimidated by your half-brother. He probably wouldn't say that now because of the process. And obviously they have to, you know, they will want to protect themselves. But he did say that to me on the phone. I can't prove it, but it was said. And so, you know, if one of the beneficiaries is leading it or intimidating, then it's be very hard to get people to sit together, wouldn't it? Because, you know, whatever. It was a shock to us because our father was always a very strong man. You know, it's hard for us to believe that that was the case. But I think when you get older, you get vulnerable and you're probably more open to feeling pressure from people for whatever reason.
Do you think there's also a kind of subtle pressure here that it's a subject that people just don't really want to talk about because it's money? You know, money is something that we're not very good at being open and honest about. You know, we like to keep our wealth hidden sometimes. Yeah. There's all sorts of ways of hiding it. And so there's also this idea that, you know, the idea that you can trust the legal system. You just write a piece of paper down, hand it to somebody, that these professionals are trustworthy when perhaps they're not.
I know. And the problem is, you know, at one point I was speaking to the Institute of Chartered Accountants and asking, you know, I took my complaint with them all the way up to independent review. And their conclusion was that we've decided not to investigate. And then later, you know, I spoke to the detective chief inspector the Institute of Chartered Accountants said, well, we're not going to do anything if the police don't do anything. And then in a conversation with the detective chief inspector, he said, oh, well, the regulatory body don't have a problem with him. And so, you know, they're both saying everyone seems to push the can down the road to everybody else. I wrote to my police and crime commissioner and spoke to her about some of what I'd done. And she said, well, I take my hat off to you. You've done an amazing job. But I think the issue is with MPs and Parliament. And I went to my MP and he said, well, the issue's with the court, the regulatory bodies.
So you're having to deal with a horrific buck passing situation.
Oh, absolutely, no one's interested. Yeah.
Well, anyway, it's fascinating to get. If you just want to say one thing, which people should do before somebody dies, before someone gets ill, this is the key, I think, to make sure that people are really aware that you've got to do something. You've got to do things differently to the way you did so you don't end up in that awful situation. Just one thing.
Speak to everyone. Be honest.
Karen Evans, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tony. Thank you.